Wake up, wake up.
Hi, I'm Matthew Carlock, and you're listening to another episode of Sleep Deprived Storytime, where I go over the what's, where's, who, how's, when's, and oh my gods of raising my two kids. This is an incredibly exhausting but ultimately rewarding experience. Let's chat.
Now let's get on with the show.
Welcome back, friends, family, friends on the internet. Okay. Summer is in full swing. Well, more or less, by the time this comes out, definitely. But first two episodes have dropped, and now I am making sure there's enough of a backlog so that we can do things like have a vacation and I not sweat about just trying to put out content. I know you guys are waiting on tenterhooks for each and every drop. Let's just jump right in it. So, updates. Ear surgery. Oh my god. Guys, I know the internet and other people said it's going to be like night and day, but it really is. It really, really is. The ear tube surgery went well. We just had our follow-up today, and everything's great. The doctor says the tubes are looking good. The only thing we need to keep in mind is whenever they go into water where there might be poop, you might be asking yourself, how much water do you go into that has poop? Well, if you splash in a creek or a river or the ocean, you're in water with poop. Anyway, other than, you know, wearing earplugs in those places, they're good to go. And it's been so, so great. So the experience. Of course, the night before, like 12 hours before, they can't have any food. So when we're done with dinner, we have to make sure that they only have water up to a certain point, and then they can't even have water, and that's nothing in the stomach that can possibly react with the anesthesia. Google it yourself. But this means that it's really important that we get them in early so that they don't wake up hangry pantses. They stayed in their pajamas pretty much the whole time we got there. Spouse, they handled everything so wonderfully, all the paperwork and planning. I'll admit, going into it, I had a different idea. Even when I recorded the last episode, I had a different idea about what this was, and it turned out to be way bigger of a deal. I'm big enough to admit that. Anyway, so we got there, paperwork being handled, the doctors and nurses, everyone were wonderful. They had a little playroom for the kids to go in. We suited up in our hazmat suits. Spouse and I, we each went in with a different kid. As the anesthesia was being applied to them. And then by the time we got back to the sitting area, they were already taking out our first kid to us. It was insanely fast. It was super fast. Couple of things to look out for if you're considering it, or we'll do it in the future or something. If you haven't had a kid go under anesthesia, it's kind of traumatic for a parent. At least it was for me. I had to do it with my 4-year-old once when they needed a MRI. Yeah, I think that's what it was. And I had the 1-year-old this time. So because they're kids, and it doesn't matter how much you explain to them what's going on, as soon as they smell that gas, which is being held on their face by a medical professional, they start freaking out. And it is very not great to watch as a parent. I mean, you tell yourself you know what's going on, but no one likes to see their kids struggling or even acting like it's not great to see, but you do know what's going on. Again, it helps that this is a very quick procedure. So I went in with the 1-year-old first. I believe so. I can't even remember the order of it. One of us went in first, then the other one went in. We both sat down in the waiting area. They brought the one-year-old out. Spouse fed the one-year-old, and I held the four-year-old in my lap. There was a TV on, very low volume, and as they came out of their drunken stupor and started paying attention more, then things got a little bit better. But even in that room, I could see an amazing difference. Like, the four-year-old has been telling us to turn up the volume whenever we're watching TV, and this was a low volume, and they could hear it. It was far away, and they could hear it crystal clear. It was so amazing. The relief. Then, you know, after 30 minutes or so, they said we could go, and they were pretty much normal. The night and day aspect, the one-year-old, oh my God, like, their personality, at least to me, it seemed to change like that. That kid was, like, pronouncing hard consonant sounds. He was doing mama, dada before, but then he was like, mama, dada. And now he's doing baba for his brother and other sounds and stuff. It's just, he seems to be a little bit more clear. I mean, this could be bias me looking for it, but teaching baby sign language, he's like pointing at objects and giving them more, or being very, very clear with what he's trying to communicating with. It's just fantastic. Side note, 1.5-year-old is trying to get away with not hearing us, but now I can just say, I know you can hear me. And they turn around and look at us like, yeah, I can hear you. It's funny. The doctor said that in all 4 ears, it was as thick as molasses. Poor kids with their ears. Ugh, I felt so bad. I really did. I don't want them to have that feeling. That's terrible. But since then, no ear infections, no nothing like that. Some of the 1-year-old's been playing with his ear. That might just be wax in the outside buildup. I definitely got that from, you know, not me, not my side of the family. That's a lie. It's all my side of the family. Anyway, but we haven't seen any drainage. The doctor said keep an eye on the drainage, and we can hold on to the medicine, and we get a little a refill on the medication for the express purpose of when we identify an ear infection, we can jump on board before it gets out of hand. I mean, that is just... New parents, old parents, ear infections are a blight. Like, I didn't realize how many sicknesses were on this planet until our kids started going to daycare. And now it is so much better. We'll see what happens when the 4.5-year-old starts going to kindergarten in a little bit. And the 1-year-old is moving up in his class. He's no longer going to be with the itty bitty babies. He's going to be with the other 1-year-olds, and we're just so darn proud. He's so spunky. He's got gumption. He's climbing. Oh my God, he's a climber. Anyway, all right, so back to the main idea of the podcast. So we talked about update with the ear thing, but the next thing I want to talk about is floor foods. Yeah. Okay. So, floor foods. I didn't realize just how dirty kids eat. I didn't think our kid was that messy. Our 4-year-old, when he was first learning how to eat, I didn't see the messes everywhere. It wasn't like the floor was just littered with debris of food. We didn't have bugs and ants in our houses. And then it became very, very apparent after we moved here, after our two dogs, RIP, Tonks and Albus. Yes, their names are Tonks and Albus. What? I'm a millennial. Got a tattoo on my leg. Leave me alone. Anyway, it turns out those two were doing all of the cleaning, like all of it. And after their passing, oh my God, our floor is just covered in food and crumbs all of the time. All of the time. You guys, it is nuts. I can't walk around our kitchen in socks without coming onto some kind of puff or goldfish or cracker morsel. We're not gross people. We're not, you know, letting food just pile up on the floor. We clean it every chance we get, but the kids, they're like throwing it or smashing it into their face or all of the above. Probably, more or less. I have definitely seen the one-year-old put a cup of puffs on his head and pretend like he's in the middle of, what was that, Dirty Dancing or something with the water falling down. Whatever. Like, it's hilarious to watch him play with the food, but it's also, like, it is insane. And since I was, you know, not up on the cleaning, or we were not up on the cleaning with the four-year-old, and he eats like a cookie monster getting a hold of any kind of baked good. Alright, all of this to talk about floor foods. Now that you know that I'm a trash goblin and I insist that my family live like trash goblins, everywhere. The food is everywhere. And no matter how many times we vacuum and stuff, there's always going to be morsels here and there. Well, every once in a while, you'll just see a kid sitting there munching. And not the 4.5-year-old. He's pretty much not going to eat food off the floor anymore. But the 1-year-old, he's just sitting there munching. Now, yes, I have caught the 4-year-old when he was younger eating a fly. I'm very impressed that he caught that fly. It was gross and we took it out immediately, of course. Apparently bug protein eating runs in the family, as my father will tell you about me. But this 1-year-old is just like a little hoover on the floor. And reaching out to friends and family, they're like, kids are gonna eat stuff off the floor all the time. Don't worry about it. And I'm kind of like, well, shouldn't I? I think I should. And a lot of you are probably yelling at the podcast right now, yelling at me, don't let your kids eat food off the floor. I know this. I'm not intentionally dropping food on the floor for them to eat. I'm not scattering it around like they're a bunch of chickens in a yard or squealing here, pig, pig, pig. Just saying, do I need to freak the heck out whenever I see them eating food off the floor? And according to all the medical people, Johns Hopkins, what to expect, they say the same thing. KidsHealth.com, the New York Post, everything. Everything says, don't. One of my favorite was a blog. What was it? Cafe Mom. Like from 2022, citing a San Diego State University study saying that like your food, everything from like carrots to like sippy cups, they pick up bacteria real quick. Like, and the wetter the food, the worse it picks up. But they were even saying things like the kids' high chair, which like they're supposed to eat off of, so that's going to be covered in germs anyway. So it's like, didn't we already learn this from the pandemic? Like literally everything has germs everywhere, and that's why we need to all pretend like we're, oh Jesus, what's his name, the guy with the spruce goose, what is his name, what, Simpsons did a parody anyway, Hughes something Hughes. Hubert Hughes? Albert Hughes? Whatever. It's gonna come to me. Sorry. Anyway, we should all be treating ourselves like that if we don't want to get any bacteria. My question was, how bad is the bacteria that the food gets on the floor? And it's no worse than your counter. Again, this is like according to Mayo, again, John Hopkins, that San Diego study, which was, by the way, sponsored by Clorox. Just saying, follow the money. Big disinfectants got an agenda. I'm joking. We should be clean. But also, you know, the floor tends to have more poop particles because of shoes. If you're the kind of family that wears shoes in the house, we try not to, but every once in a while, you know, the work world will run in with shoes. I'll put my shoes on, go outside, come inside real quick to grab something. So, like, stuff on the floor. If you have dogs or pets, they got lots of stuff on their feet. So while a clean floor tends to have the same kind of bacteria run as a countertop, the chances of consuming, you know, poop are greater with the food that falls on the floor. Is there a 5-second rule? No, there's not a 5-second rule. It doesn't matter. While, yes, the longer something and the wetter something is on the ground, the more, you know, stuff it'll pick up, it's still going to get bacteria and stuff. Eating food off the floor, is it safe to eat food that's dropped on the floor? No, it is not. Are kids going to do it anyway? Yes. Should you freak out about it? Probably not. If you're keeping up a, like, more or less clean house, if you vacuum, clean once or twice a week with disinfectant, try not to wear your shoes in the house, then I probably don't need to freak out about your kid eating some, you know, outside fecal matter. Don't scatter puffs on the ground and say, here, chick, 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 chick. I'm not saying anyone would do that. I'm not saying I do that. Although, Halloween's coming up and chicken costume would be really funny. No, it wouldn't. Okay. Anyway. So, that's all I got for this one. It's kind of a scatterbrained episode. I wanted to talk about the food on the floor for a while, but I didn't have anything, a lot to fill it out. So I'm glad I got to give you guys an update on the ear gum surgery. All right. That's it for me today. You guys take, get some relaxation in there, exercise, take humor in the little things. And as always, get some sleep. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Please support the podcast by liking, sharing, and subscribing on whatever platform you're listening to.
You can also help the podcast through a monthly subscription through Spotify. For a low, low monthly price, you will get extra content such as readings of other short stories I've written, a chapter-by-chapter read of my middle grade novel, Defenders, unedited interview, bloopers, and so much more.
You can follow the podcast on Twitter at SDSTpodcast. You can follow me personally on my Instagram and Twitters at KCOLRACM. That's at ColRackM. And finally, a big shout out to Albert Maldonado for engineering the sound to perfection and writing our really awesome song. All right. See you next time.